This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Before the break, we talked about this morning's hearings in Congress, about lessons learned by law enforcement during the Boston Marathon bombings. Now we're going to spend some time talking about the lessons learned by Boston's medical community.
And we'll begin with a recollection from the finish line.
I don't know how many patients I saw. I can't even tell you.
Alicia Shambo spent 4 years in the Navy as a hospital corpsman and taught CPR and EMT courses as a reservist. She was on Boylston Street 1 year ago, handing out blankets to runners when the bombs went off. Alicia recalls thinking of her own two daughters when she rushed to help bombing survivor Victoria McGrath.
And we got her on the gurney and, you know, checked her tourniquets and tried to get her stabilized. Tried to reassure her, got an IV started, and now she's surrounded by guys, and they're starting to cut off her clothes, and she's scared to death. She doesn't know what's happening, and she looked at me, and she said, "Don't leave me. Please don't leave me." And I thought of my Natalie, and I thought of Brittany, and I thought, if that was my daughter, I wouldn't want you to leave her if she asked you not to. So I remember looking at this guy that was loading her in the ambulance, and I thought, and I looked at him, he said, "You can't leave her." I'm like, "No, you're right, I can't." So I got in, and the whole time I was in her face saying, "Open your eyes, you're going to be okay. Stay with me, hold my hand, squeeze my hand. You're good. And she's like, "Where am I going? What's happened? I'm so scared. I'm like, "You know what? Love you. You'll be fine. I just kept kissing her.
Alicia Shambo's reflection comes from WBUR's Oral History Project, a collaboration with Northeastern University's Our Marathon Boston Bombing Digital Archive. The interview was conducted by Jane Guberman. Our special coverage of the anniversary, 26.2, is produced by WBUR's Kelly Horan.
Now, Alicia, of course, was one of the hundreds, if not thousands, of medical personnel who responded that day. The British medical journal The Lancet called Boston's performance rapid, exceedingly well-organized, orchestrated, and inspiring. But a year later, what lessons does Boston's medical community take from the day? What could have been done differently? And are there any transferable lessons for other cities from a response that seems so unique to a specific time, this time, and a specific place, this place, 1 year ago? So we're going to speak now with three people with powerful perspectives on this. And I'm going to begin with James Hooley. He's the chief of the Boston Emergency Medical Service. He joins us in the studio. James Hooley, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
It's really wonderful to have you. And I just wonder if you might, first of all, briefly just remind us on the day of the bombing, at the time of the bombing, where you were. You were near the main medical tent.
Right, I was at the rear of the main medical tent on St. James Avenue at Dartmouth Street. And in my position that day, I was functioning as the EMS command for the event in Boston.
Right. And obviously Boston EMS had had, you know, many years of planning for the major event that is the marathon, even without an emergency.
Many years of planning for that major event and hundreds of special events that we have every year. Obviously the 4th of July and the marathon are two of the larger ones, but they are large events that give us an awful lot of opportunity to practice supporting large events like that and to have contingencies in place.
Yeah. So when you first realized that there was an extraordinary event going on, two bombs at the finish line, what's the first thing that you did?
Well, the first thing I did was obviously after I heard the second blast, that removed any doubt as to what was going on. We heard our folks coming on the radio and very accurately describing that two devices just went off, so that removed any doubt as well. I headed up to the initial scenes, but again, more in my role of EMS command, all the EMTs, the paramedics, the first responders, the medical volunteers, they're all jumped into action. From my perspective, my job now was to make sure that the hospitals were notified, that the private ambulance companies that were providing us backup assistance start orchestrating that.
Right. I mean, so your job is essentially to help coordinate a massive effort across services, you know, beginning with the very paramedics who work for you. I mean,
correct.
I was looking back and reading that, you know, near either on the route or near the end where the finish line is, there were, what, at least 90 paramedics right there on bicycle, on foot, even in golf carts?
Correct, because it is such a large event, and the egress in access getting to the area is difficult on a good day. And we also have other citizens working or living in the area that have nothing to do with the event. I believe it was up to 142 additional personnel working that day along just the 2.8-mile stretch of that race, which is in Boston. So that consisted of 13 ambulances and then, as you said, dozens of EMTs with defibrillators on bicycles, on golf carts, with John Deere gaiters with stretchers on them so we could extract patients, and also foot teams, proceed-out teams with stretchers who could go out into a crowd.
Right. You know, I mean, we could spend the whole time today talking just about the specifics of all the medical expertise that was applied right there at the finish line. I'm sure over time we'll have a chance to do that over the coming days and weeks when we look back on the day. But one question I do want to ask you before we bring in our other guests is, I think one of the things that I've read and heard over the past year is that one of the most intelligent and helpful things that the EMS service did was to be sure that not any one or two particular hospitals were overloaded with patients, that somehow you and your service got, you know, an equal number, roughly an equal number of patients to, you know, the many hospitals that were able to take them. How did you decide who to send where?
Well, that's part of the planning in any sort of a mass casualty event is that, one, you don't want the closest hospital overwhelmed because you know folks are going to self-report to it. And also is to try to distribute the patients. So the goal was to not have any one hospital feel like they now have a problem where they have to redistribute patients. And up at our dispatch center up at Boston CMed is where we track care capabilities of hospitals, who's got trauma services, who's got pediatrics, who can handle burns. And they took that burden off us in the field for that and just began assigning. So the crews would come on and say, I have two critical, I have two urgent, or I have four minor injuries, and they would get their assignment and just be told where to go.
Right. So for you, as you look back a year later, and if we just stay focused for another minute on the scene at the finish line, what's the biggest lesson that you learned?
The biggest lesson I learned was that your plans have to be flexible. Here we had this major organization and plan set up for the medical area, which is basically designed to keep people out of emergency rooms. We don't want to overwhelm the hospital with all these runners and spectators. But because of what happened, we just had to quickly switch gears into our mass casualty plan, which is now like expedite getting people to trauma centers, to hospitals that have operating rooms available. And having that plan well practiced and rehearsed as just in your playbook makes it a lot easier just to switch gears and go to that.
So practice, practice, practice. Yep. Well, listeners, we're speaking with James Hooley. He's chief of the Boston Emergency Medical Service, and we're talking about lessons learned by Boston's medical community in the wake of the marathon bombings about a year ago. And listeners, if you're one of the members of the medical community, we'd love to hear from you. Call us about lessons that you learned from that day and the days following April 15th, 2013. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Mr. Hooley, if you can just stand by for a second, I'd love to turn to Dr. Alec Farber, who also joins us in the studio. He's chief of vascular surgery at Boston Medical Center, one of the many hospitals that received dozens of victims from the finish line where James Hooley was working. Dr. Farber, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
So for you, what was your first... I understand that you were actually in surgery working on a completely different case when you were first alerted that something extraordinary had happened.
That's true. I was on call at Boston Medical Center, and I was performing a procedure, and then a page went out saying that there was a mass casualty situation and that all surgeons needed to report to the emergency room.
Had you ever received a page like that?
I have never received a page like that. And there was a quick thought that maybe this is just a drill, but there's something that told me that this was not a drill.
Okay. So, I mean, and how soon were you able to get down to the ER?
Well, the good news is that we were finishing up the case, so I was able to leave and run over to the emergency room.
And when you got to the emergency department, what did you see?
Well, when I got to the emergency room, I saw a sight that I have never seen before. We treat a lot of patients with injuries at Boston Medical Center, but this was nothing that I've seen before. There were There were beds full of people that were covered with blood. There were limbs hanging off by a thread. It looked like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah. You know, it seems as if one of the lessons learned for medical response in emergency like this is that there are various sort of loci, if I can say, of coordination. And another major one is, how do you treat a surge of patients in an emergency room, all of whom, we're talking about dozens and dozens of patients who come in with the kind of grave wounds that you were describing. I mean, so how was the emergency department operating to take, you know, those dozens of patients all at once?
Well, I must say that the emergency room department did a fantastic job. Certainly when I ran in there and I saw the scene, I immediately walked up to the trauma surgeon who was actually telling people where to go, if you will, and I asked him, what can I do? And he said, knowing that I'm a vascular surgeon, he said that I think you need to see the following patient. Come up to me.
And so did that take you right back to one of the surgery department? Or?
Well, no, it just he walked into a room where there was a young teenage woman lying there. She was pale. She had a very large wound in her thigh. There was a tourniquet in place above the wound. And she looked very ill, and the trauma surgeon was concerned that there was a vascular injury, and that is why he brought me in there.
Right, and the vascular injury, I mean, could have been very quickly fatal.
Yeah, these things are fatal.
And so I know that you can't identify the patient because of health information privacy laws, but how long were you with that patient, and what did you do in order to save her life, essentially?
Well, I concurred with the trauma surgeon that, in fact, there was a likely vascular injury, and we immediately brought her to the operating room. Mm-hmm. And in the operating room, we noted that she had one of the major vessels going into the leg, going to her foot, called the femoral artery, was completely disrupted, and the vein was disrupted as well. And so we ended up doing a bypass over her artery to try to save her leg. At the same time, we recovered a very large piece of shrapnel, which was about the size of an iPhone, from her thigh that essentially cut both the artery and the vein.
Wow. So all of this is going on. You're working on a very intensive, delicate surgery for some period of time on one of many of the victims, who had received some treatment expertly at the site of the bombing itself. But I'm wondering, in retrospect and speaking with your colleagues, et cetera, how would you judge the hospital's overall response? Because obviously it wasn't just the surgeons and the emergency department that was based in high gear. It was the entire hospital.
I must say that I'm very proud of Boston Medical Center and its response. I think it was integrated very nicely. I think that everybody fell in line. This event occurred at change of shift, that there were twice as many nurses available. They stayed. I think it was remarkably well coordinated.
So the shift change with the nurses means that you, as you just said, you had twice as many nurses.
That's correct.
Because the shift change is what, roughly around 3
around
o'clock?
Around 3 o'clock, yes.
Wow. Okay, so that was, if fortune can play any role here, that was one of the moments it did.
That's correct.
Now, James Hooley had said earlier that part of the reason why the response from Boston EMS was so expert was all the training and the practicing for major events like this. Similar training goes on, in hospitals like Boston Medical Center. Did you see evidence of that?
Well, it certainly does go on. And again, we do take care of sick patients who are injured, but never in such a degree. And I must say that the training that we had clearly showed that we were ready to take care of this very difficult situation.
Mm. And so for you, what's one of the primary lessons learned?
Well, that we can come together when we're needed as a team and really do the best job we can.
Mm. And James Hooley, let me return to you briefly, because you're coordinating with the paramedics and first responders in the field and the hospital. So when you hear what Dr. Farber describes, what does that bring to mind for you?
Well, it underscores, the need for us to try to get the right patient to the right hospitals the right amount of time. A lot of the patients had some terrible-looking injuries, but, they weren't necessarily going to to die from that, but there were probably about 25 to 30 patients who were critically injured who needed that level of expertise and attention, and that's was one of the important reasons to distribute the patients as best we could to facilities so that somebody didn't have to wait for a thoracic surgeon or have like three cases ahead. So that again, that was one of our goals in distributing those patients.
And I'm seeing that you got some of those most critically wounded patients to hospitals in, what, 15 to 18 minutes from the time that you first were able to reach them?
Yeah, pretty quick. The first 30 that I believe were tagged red were out of there in about 15 minutes.
Wow. Well, James Hooley and Alec Farber, stand by, because there's one more voice I'd like to bring in terms of reflecting on lessons learned not just for Boston, but for medical communities around the country. It's Arthur Kellerman. He's the dean of the medical school at the Uniformed Service University. He's co-author of a review of the response regarding the Boston Marathon that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. He joins us from Washington. Mr. Kellerman, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you.
So you heard James Hooley and Alec Farber describe the efforts that they put together, that they were a part of, on the scene in Boston. For communities outside of Boston, what do you think they should be paying special attention to in terms of the lessons they could learn from what happened a year ago?
Well, I think the points that have been made on the program already have covered a number of the key concepts. You know, there's an old adage that it's better to be lucky than good. Mm-hmm. Boston was both lucky, but they were also very good. There were certain characteristics of this particular bombing that played to the rescuers' favor. But they also did a superb job. As you heard earlier with your video or the audio from Ms. Shambo, bystanders played a critically important role. And many of those bystanders had prior experience as healthcare providers or military service. Boston EMS not only prepared for the event, they prepared for a terrorist bombing by hosting a major conference years earlier where they listened to and learned from rescuers from Mumbai, from London and Madrid, and changed their response plans based on the wisdom from those other global cities. And finally, Boston's hospitals did a great job because they were prepared to do a great job.
Right.
And when you put superb bystander care, superb EMS care, and superb hospital care together, you've got a great response.
Hmm.
Clearly, there were also factors that played a role in lowering the fatality rate, but the next American city cannot count on being lucky or good.
Well,
they
have
to be prepared.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Kellerman, but let me ask you about that, because I know that that has been of some concern for people in the wake of what we saw happen last year. I mean, there were so many things unique to the situation, many of which you just outlined, plus the fact that we have so many first-rate hospitals that were within just a few miles of the bombing location, and the fact it was a day where the medical community, the first responders community, was just on high alert as it is, you know, preparing for, you know, what they typically call the potential mass casualty of just running a marathon. So, we can't have that same confidence for other cities that may just experience something equally horrible. We hope not, but they might on an average day.
Yeah, I think other cities have to be prepared for something far more horrible. I mean, these were two relatively low-yield bombs. They were placed out of doors. It was race day. It was a holiday, so the streets were relatively clear of traffic. All of that helped contribute to a remarkably low fatality rate. But it's important for other cities to understand you can't just say, oh, we'll rise to the occasion. Boston's rescuers prepared, their bystanders were engaged and knew what to do, and their hospitals had drilled and drilled, and all of that paid off. Other American cities cannot look at Boston and say, see, that proves we can all do a good job. They should be understanding and learning the lessons the same way other baseball teams would learn from the Red Sox. Hey, the Red Sox got some lucky breaks on their way to the World Series this year, but they won based on preparation, teamwork, and execution. America's cities need to learn from Boston the same lessons.
Well, James Hooley, let me ask you, what do you think, I mean, do you have any concerns about Boston's preparedness, say, on a non-marathon kind of day?
Well, you know, a lot of the same principles would come into play, but again, talking about the size of the forces that you would have on that day, and the number of ambulances personnel, that would be a limiting factor in how quickly you could bring in extra help. But one of the things that we did see last year was willingness of the public and bystanders to engage. There's a lot of folks who live here that either work in healthcare or public safety or have prior military experience who are out there, mm-hmm. who are willing to step up. And so I think one of the challenges is how do we tap into that when the next bad thing happens? And I didn't even want to say aloud what I imagine it could be.
Right.
But if there were an event, how do we now put those folks to work to help us with that?
Yeah.
Because there are people who, in a setting, maybe they just need direct pressure held on them. There may be some other folks that just need somebody to stay with them because they're lower acuity until we can get to them and we can move on and get their most injured or the sickest people out first. But having that engaged public is going to be a real resource.
Yeah. Arthur Kellerman, let me ask you, because, I mean, the type of attack that we saw in Boston was an explosive, it was a bomb attack. But in the wake of the September 11th attacks, it seems as if a lot of effort and money was put into to preparing for an entirely different kind of terrorism. That is, you know, I guess bioterrorism was where a lot of federal dollars went. So do you think that one of the lessons from Boston is that we have to be prepared for what's basically the type of terrorism that's more familiar in other parts of the world?
We need to have a balanced response. We did put a lot of our chips on bioterrorism in the first years after 9/11, but I think there's been a greater recognition that having an all-hazards approach, being prepared to adapt and respond regardless of the threat, is important. Clearly, explosives are the calling card for Al-Qaeda and for many international and domestic terrorist organizations. There's one other really important point to make, and it's come up and the chief mentioned it again, and that's military experience. Many of the rescuers have served and were trained. You heard in both of your other guests the fact that tourniquets were used. I'm an ER doc. For 25 of my last 30 years, we said tourniquets were taboo. The military brought them back and proved the value of tourniquets on the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. Military lessons learned from 10 years of conflict are profoundly shaping and improving emergency and trauma care in this country.
Well, let me turn that to Dr. Alec Farber. How, I mean, that's one example of how what happened in Boston a year ago has sort of evolved medical treatment. Is there any other way in which that event changed how you do what you do?
Well, I think that certainly the tourniquet has proven itself once again, and I think it's just if it wasn't for the use of tourniquets, and by the way, some of these tourniquets were applied by people who were not first responders, that a lot more lives would have been lost.
Right, if that hadn't happened.
If that had not happened, right.
Yeah. James Hooley, let me ask you, now that we've got a year's perspective on what happened last April, is there anything that you think could have been done better?
Better last year. Well,
I think he gave you the right answer.
Yeah.
I don't think that Boston could have done better. I think the best that other cities can hope is to equal that kind of achievement. Again, can't count on luck. We have to be prepared. And my concern is that too many cities today are so focused on the bottom line that they're not considering the critical need to be prepared. You know, we saw in Hurricane Sandy, major hospitals in New York became disasters themselves when they lost power. A board of directors of a hospital is more likely to invest in a fancy piece of diagnostic equipment than a backup generator. We need backup generators. We need the capacity to respond to disasters and terrorist attacks.
Yeah. Well, Arthur Kellerman is Dean of the Medical School at the Uniformed Service University. He's also co-author of a review of the response of the medical community at the Boston Marathon bombings. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. Kellerman, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And James Hooley, Chief of Boston EMS, didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
Thanks.
But thank you for joining us today as
thank
well.
Thank you.
And Dr. Alec Farber, Chief of Vascular Surgery at Boston Medical Center, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And I think if I may say on behalf of our entire community to all of you and all of the first responders who may be listening today, 1 year later, we are still incredibly grateful for all the work that went on that day. And perhaps James Hooley's silence was the best answer that maybe it's okay. You know what? Terrific work was done that day. And if any lessons to be learned, it's to be hoped that future responders act as well as we saw last April. Stay with us, for in a moment we'll come back with sports with Bill Littlefield. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.